Welcome, everyone, to episode 6 of the NBA podcast presented by B-Ball Breakdown. I'm Brian Toporek, and joining me today is Sarah Chalea. How are you, Sarah?
Doing as well as can be expected.
That sounds about right. Our third co-host, Morten Jensen, is unable to join us today. He's feeling a bit under the weather, so he is about to miss the epic rant Sarah is going to go on about the end of Spurs Thunder Game 2. So we're going to start there, and then we'll touch upon some of the playoff action that's happened over the past couple days. But I'm ceding the floor to you, Sarah. What's going through your head after whatever the hell just happened in Game 2 of Spurs Thunder?
What is this podcast rated? Are we family friendly?
You can feel free to curse as much or as little as you would like.
I'm going to try to keep a lid on it. Okay. First of all, feel better, Morten. We miss you. What can I say about that? I'm going to preface this whole thing, first of all, by saying this. The last 13 and a half seconds is not why the Spurs lost. I'm not saying that. They're not saying that. So, as the kids say, don't at me with that. We're not talking about that. What a mess that was.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to begin. Okay, I will tell you that I didn't read the last 2.5 minute or 2 minute report because I actually don't need the report to tell me what should have been called.
That's fair.
And it really does nobody any good, right? It's kind of pointless.
I did read the report. There were 5 missed calls on that play alone, I believe. I think it was 3 Spurs fouls versus 2 Thunder fouls, for whatever that's worth. But Dion fouled Manu, and there was some other extracurricular activity outside of the inbounding. So
yeah, it was amazing. It was truly amazing. I think Morten posted, what was that clip from? I think Anchorman.
Yeah,
he's like,
yeah.
I'm not even mad. That's impressive. 5 fouls in 13 seconds none of them were called. That's amazing.
Right.
And to me, obviously the Spurs got away with stuff too, but the thing of that is, you know, there's some things that we've grown accustomed to seeing that we know teams are going to get away with, especially in that situation. Mm-hmm. First of all, people are going nuts over Manu stepping on the line. To me, I'm sure that happens more often than we know. And it wasn't like he was standing on the line the entire time. His toe briefly went over the line and he got back behind it and was well behind it when he was contacted. The holding that I think Kawhi and Patty were holding, mm-hmm. jerseys or whatever.
Yeah.
That I'm not okay with. I don't know how the hell you're supposed to get open with a guy holding your jersey. But there again, if you watch literally any game and it's close in the last few minutes, you're going to see that on any inbound play. We see it every Absolutely. Single time. And it almost never gets called.
Right.
Same thing with LaMarcus when he got the offensive rebound and got held. Yeah. I was sure live that he got either whacked or held, but there again, you know that's probably not going to get called. So we expect that. I don't know that we should accept it, but we expect it. And the fan, I don't really want to get into the fan because I really think she, you know, if you watch the video, she got knocked over and was trying to brace herself. I don't think she was trying to keep him out of the play.
I forget who tweeted it or where I saw it, but someone who witnessed what happened did say that the woman was falling over and was just trying to catch herself.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily malicious, even though the video that was making the rounds Monday night made it seem that way.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know for sure, but it definitely seemed instinctive to me more than, you know, trying to gain an advantage. But
right. Yeah.
Yeah. For what Dion Waiters did, that was amazing. How many people have you seen, you know, Charles Barkley, Chris Webber, God, how many the referees themselves,
right?
People with so much experience in the game of basketball, years and years of experience from all levels, will tell you that they have never seen anybody even try that before.
And he's so unapologetic about it, which is even better.
Yeah.
Like, he was just like, I gotta inbound the ball. We didn't have a timeout. What do you want me to do?
The ball's on that guy. My God, Mark Davis is standing right there, and he's like, "Eh, I'm just gonna drop this elbow in Manu's chest and see what happens."
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah,
Man.
I mean, we can only hope that game three on Friday we don't have such madness at the end. But I do want to know just big takeaways for the first two games for you.
Let me go back one more time, real quick,
Okay.
before we put this to bed.
Okay.
For once and for all. Okay. The one thing that I kind of take issue with as far as the referees, like, we all get that it's a tough job and they're gonna make multiple mistakes throughout the game. And I don't think anybody's gonna be that mad about like a close block charge call, right?
Right.
But the thing that I don't really love was the excuse of we've never seen that before.
It's a fair point.
I just think, you know, we already know that if the defender reaches over and contacts the inbounder or even touches the ball before it's entered into the field of play or the court or however you want to describe it, we know that's a violation. So it stands to reason that if the inbounder is crazy enough to reach over and contact their defender, that's also a violation. Like, that's not a huge leap in logic. Like, so I don't feel like you need to have seen that before. Like, I've never seen anyone actually steal candy from a baby. But I know that it's wrong. I don't have to wait
Touché.
for it to happen.
Yeah.
So that was just amazing. But hey, now we've seen it, and so it will hopefully never happen to anyone again.
Right. Yeah, you one would hope.
Yeah. So anyway, big takeaways. Sorry about that.
No, that's please. I thought you'd be going another 15 minutes. This is
I've cooled down. What has it been, like at least 48 hours?
Yeah. I can
So
only imagine Tuesday morning you were pretty fired up. Understandably so. I mean, if this happened to my team, my TV would be in the graveyard right now.
it was a kind of a fog the next morning. It was like I was like, wait, did that happen? You
Yeah.
know, still couldn't really believe it, but it's all good. I kind of disappointed, but then also it's a good thing that we weren't like recording live as I watched it unfold.
Right.
It would have been madness. There was definite yelling and just exasperation, but
That's, yeah.
it's all good. It's all good. What was more disappointing, honestly, was the way that the Spurs played. I didn't play anywhere near well enough to win, and that's on them. I went back and watched the first, like, let's see, 3 minutes, just for the people, because it surely wasn't because I wanted to. Within 4 minutes, they were 1 of 10, and they had missed 6 layups. And
Oh my God.
one tip in after one of the missed layups. And a lot of that was my guy Timmy Duncan, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oh man. So that's the thing. I mean, I feel like people are inclined to look at the numbers or look at how poorly the Spurs shot and say, well, the Thunder played a lot better defense. The thing is, they really didn't.
Right.
You know, especially in the beginning, they gave up so many good looks and the Spurs were just terrible. And if you go to, I don't know that we should even, if we're supposed to promote other sites,
I think
but
that's fair. It's allowed.
yeah, I mean, I wrote a recap too at B-Ball Breakdown, so you can read my recap.
Yes,
But
that's true.
Pounding the Rock also has an article up right now. I think it's called Spurs Beat Themselves by Abandoning the Pick and Roll.
Oh, interesting.
And I tend to agree with that, and I tend to agree with they reiterate kind of what I was saying in my breakdown as well. That and they have clips. They've got plenty of clips that show it that, you know, they were getting great looks out of the pick and rolls to begin the game, and they just were blowing layups. And so then they kind of got away from it and went into isolation play. And then in a great turn of events, the Thunder started running the pick and roll and beating the Spurs with it. So that's kind of the big thing for me. You can look at it from a Spurs perspective and say, well, the good news is they were still getting good looks and pretty regularly.
Right.
But God, their offense, I told you, their offense has had red flags around it all year for me.
Yeah, you did call that even before the playoffs started. So
Yeah.
credit where credit is due there.
Yeah. So, and I told y'all. LaMarcus, too, going back at Ibaka was going to
Yeah.
be a thing.
My
And I
God.
completely expected that he would average 40 a game. So,
Did you? Okay, good. Yeah, 'cause I did not at all. So I
no.
guess we'll just count on that.
Yeah, definitely not. But I knew he was going to be good, but I didn't think we'd ever see that again. Like, this is Portland LaMarcus, you know?
Yeah, this is honestly better than Portland LaMarcus. This is like, if he's this good, the Spurs dynasty is in no danger of falling apart even when Duncan and Manu retire. Like, he and Kawhi, you just need to put a younger point guard around them and you have a new big three.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been the... Honestly, the biggest surprise for me in this whole series is how well Aldridge has played.
Yeah.
And our boy Danny Green, he's coming alive a little bit. So Danny. We'll have to see. So I know you picked Spurs in five before the series started. Guessing you would hedge a little bit on that, but are you still confident moving forward in the Spurs?
Oh, no, we're good. We're about to win three in a row now, so.
Ooh. Ooh, okay. You heard it here first, folks. Spurs in five stays.
No, I can't go back on that. I'm staying with that. But no, I'm not feeling great about it right now. they definitely gave away a game at home.
Yeah.
And that's such a dangerous thing to do, especially against a team like the Thunder. So they've shown, you know, that they can defend when they feel like it.
Right.
I still don't think they're going to do it consistently just because they haven't all year. But, I mean, you let them get a little motivated, get that belief. You never know what can happen. And they're going home. So that's scary for sure.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Game three is Friday night. I said last time, you know, honestly, the way that game ended made me more confident in my Spurs and six pick.
Right.
Just because, like, OKC's late game offense... It's going to cost them a game. It damn near did in game two. I mean, they almost coughed up a four-point lead with less than 20 seconds left. So no lead is safe in this series. And the Spurs really, I mean, they had a three-on-one. Like, they really should have converted and won that game. So, yeah, I have no faith that in the waning moments of a close game, the Spurs are going to be out-executed by the Thunder.
No, that's the thing. But if I'm honest with it, as someone who's, you know, paid attention really closely to the Spurs too this year, I think, you know, they are not what they were as far as late game execution. Because a lot of that, you know, it has shifted. The ball is not necessarily in Tony's hands as much anymore or Tim's hands. And I think you saw a little bit of that in game two. I think they were down three with like a minute to go. They had the ball, and they went down to LaMarcus, and he decided to pass it back out, and Kawhi like sprinted to the 3-point line, and Waiters was right on him, and he just kind of pulled up and bricked the three, and that was, of course, Pop said, I feel like we lost the game three times. That was one of the times that they lost the game. It probably should have been over there.
Yeah.
But obviously they had some more opportunities because the Thunder have their own issues. But that wasn't a great choice. He probably could have gotten by Waiters at that point, and he didn't need to settle for the three. So there's just things like that where they're not getting the best shot always either. Hopefully they will learn from that and be better. Same thing, like you pointed out, the 3-on-1. They absolutely should have scored there.
Right.
Give Steven Adams a lot of credit because he hustled his ass off and frankly deserved to win for the way that he defended that last play just about by himself.
Right.
But that's actually an issue that they've had for a couple years now. Fast breaks. They don't get a lot of fast break points. They don't make great decisions anymore. And it's so weird because they used to be really good at it. Especially when they had that foreign legion unit with Marco and Manu. But this group, Danny's not our best passer. He's probably one of the marginal passers on the team. And so he makes a high pass that takes away the advantage that they had. But that's something that I looked at even back when they lost in the first round to the Clippers last year. In game seven, I broke down, I think, like seven different fast break opportunities they had, and they didn't score on a single one.
Wow. Okay.
And they lost that game by 1 point as well.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, these are opportunities that you have to cash in on, and they have not been great at it lately. So that is a concern.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. We'll keep an eye out for that in game three Friday night. Let's turn our attention to a series that is not as close, the Cavs-Hawks. We are recording this on a Thursday, so game two of that series was last night. The Cavs murdered the Hawks. They hit a single game record of 25 three-pointers. J.R. Smith had 7. LeBron went 4 of 6 from beyond the arc. It was just a massacre. It was a total massacre. So, Sarah, do you think the Hawks have any chance of making this a series, or should Cleveland just book its spot in the Eastern Conference Finals now?
I don't want to overreact to what was a ridiculous performance, but God, I'm just so disappointed in the Hawks. I really thought this year that they could maybe at least get one or two games. Like, let's do a little better than what we did last year. But it's not looking good, is it?
No, it's really not.
I think that they can do a lot better defensively. There was a lot of standing and watching last night. So perhaps they get a little closer going to Atlanta. But I don't know. You guys, you said what's Cleveland in 5, and that's generous.
Yeah.
I would have to agree with that. That's certainly the way that it's looking right now. I don't. Who knows? Maybe we get bad JR again.
Yeah, right. I think that's the hope. You just have to. The big three are going to do their damage, but if you limit the supporting cast, you can steal a game. But if JR Smith is hitting 7 threes on you, just dig your grave now. You're done. I mean, I just think not having Damari Carroll is killing them, because LeBron is really, he's just having his way. Kevin Love has not shot well in this series, but he's been a force on the glass along with Tristan Thompson. I just think this Cavs front court is such a bad matchup for Atlanta, because Atlanta, both of those guys, Millsap and Horford, are basically power forwards. I mean, Horford plays the center, but you know, they're not like a truly physically imposing front court. And, you know, 5 years ago, even you play like Indiana, like 2012 Indiana, and you're going up against Roy Hibbert, you have a different set of skills. So you have a matchup advantage. Like Horford can step out from behind the 3-point line and you're drawing Hibbert away from the basket. For Cleveland, Love and Tristan Thompson are both power forwards too. So you basically have 4 power forwards going at each other, but Cleveland's guys are both monsters on the glass. I forget, Horford had, what, like 3 or 4 rebounds last night? Like, you just can't win if you're getting out-rebounded that badly. And that was an issue in the conference finals last year, too. In that 4-game sweep, Cleveland had about 50 more rebounds than the Hawks.
Jeez.
I think I mentioned last time, like, Tristan Thompson, I think, had 17 offensive rebounds. Horford had 19 total in the conference finals last year.
Wow.
And it seems like the same thing's happening again. So I'm sorry, Hawks. I honestly didn't have much faith in them, as my Cleveland in 5 pick would suggest. It's such a bad matchup for them. And Kyrie, you know, he was only there for half the series last time around, and now he's just going off. I think we're looking at Cleveland is they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. We just need to speed through this and hope none of the Cavs get hurt in this series, so we at least get a full strength Cleveland. Because now, I mean, I don't want to say they would be favored by any stretch of the imagination, but now they at least look formidable enough that whoever comes out of the West, the finals might be a series. You know, I think a lot of the talk has been whoever goes in the Western Conference Finals, whoever's playing the Warriors, that's the real NBA Finals. And then whoever wins that is just going to blast the Cavs. I think whoever wins the West, especially if it's the Warriors, they're still favored over Cleveland based on what happened last year and, you know, based on how historically great they are. But I don't know that it's a pushover by any means. So I'm just hoping we keep Cleveland at full strength so we can at least just give us like one good round of the playoffs. Like the first round was terrible. We got a couple good series this time, but you know, this Cleveland-Atlanta series is pretty bad. It looks like Warriors-Portland's heading that way too. So just one good round. That's all I want.
Yeah. See, that's why the Spurs had to drop that game so that this would be a good series. Because
that's true.
They were definitely going to win in five.
Yeah. You're doing us a favor. Thanks, Pop. That was really nice.
No, seriously, it is so disappointing, isn't it? Because we thought our reward for the terrible first round, especially in the West, was going to be Clippers, Warriors, Spurs, yeah. Thunder. Everybody right. hopefully healthy. But that completely evaporated before our eyes. I'd have to agree with everything that you said about the Hawks and the Cavs. It's just very sad times. And also for the finals, I mean, yeah, especially if the Warriors get to the finals, I think they're definitely the favorite.
Right.
But, you know, with Steph being somewhat, you know, of a question mark now, if the Cavs get hot and they get there too, you never know. I mean, they are yeah. a dangerous team. I still remember that Spurs-Cavs game last year when Kyrie was, like, unconscious. Mm-hmm. And it didn't even matter who was on him at that point. Oh, the Spurs right. threw everybody at him, and he just still won them the game. So
that was it, where he went off for, like, 57?
Yes.
Is that the one?
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, they have that in them. If they get a game or two like that where people are just going off, like last night, you yeah. just never know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were up 2-1 last year without Love and with Irving only playing one game. And then the Warriors, you know, they figured out, oh, we could just small ball them to death. But, you know, this time around, I really wonder if they would at least try LeBron at the five when they go to that death lineup and do, like, Kyrie, Shumpert, Smith, maybe Dele and LeBron, and just yeah. kind of beat Draymond Green in his own game. Because, you know, that's where Draymond is so dangerous, because opposing fives just have no chance against him. But if you just do what they're doing, play their own game, you know, I don't know that lineup that I just said has the offensive firepower to match wits with the Warriors, but Cleveland at least has options.
I think we all at least just deserve to see LeBron at the five versus Draymond at the five.
Yeah, just that would be so fun. It would be so fun. So let's hope, if that's what the finals winds up being, let's hope Tyronn Lue is listening to this podcast and is jotting down some notes.
Yes, I'm sure he is.
Yeah, right? I'm sure he has nothing better to do right now. Let's switch our focus now. We're going to go to the other side of the Eastern Conference bracket, Toronto-Miami. We've had one game so far, and it was a barn burner. It's pretty back and forth throughout the whole game. Miami took a late lead. And then Kyle Lowry hits a ridiculous half-court buzzer beater to send the game into overtime. He had been awful up until that point, and he actually finished the game 3 of 13, so he was awful even throughout overtime. The Heat scored 6 straight to start overtime. Raptors didn't score until there was about a little more than a minute left, so the Heat escape thanks to a Dwayne Wade steal fast break. So they have stolen home court once again. The Raptors, it's just so hard to have faith in this team. Like every time you think they've turned it around, they just do something like this. I forget. I want to say they've lost their last 5 game ones at home, something like that.
Yeah, it's something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, like, oh, geez, it's so... I just, you know, I want to buy in. I thought this is the best Raptors team we've seen, but prior to the series, I chose Heat in 6. I stand by that, obviously, based on what we saw in Game 1. We should mention Dwayne Wade bruised his knee at the end of the game. He played through it. He got that steal and fast break, so he seemed okay, but something to keep an eye on moving forward. Also, Hassan Whiteside twisted his knee in the first quarter. He came back and was a beast. He had, I think, 17 rebounds, so he was okay, but again, something to keep an eye on, that those things can swell up overnight. I believe both are set to play game 2, but you can always aggravate an injury, and that would change the complexion of the series. So, Sarah, we didn't hear from you last time. What would you have picked before the series started, and did game 1 change your opinion at all?
I think Heat in 6 is probably a pretty good prediction. Game 1 was... Like, you keep waiting for DeRozan and Lowry to finally break out, and it's just not really happening. So like you said, it's getting pretty hard to have faith and think that they're going to ever, the whole team is ever going to really turn it around. I'm kind of to the point, it's not exactly the same, but where I was with the Bulls.
Like, oh, no.
Poor Morton. Yeah, but like after last year, I finally gave up on the Bulls, like thinking they were ever going to beat whatever team LeBron is on.
Right.
You know, for the longest time, I thought they were the ones who were finally going to do it. And last year, they had such a great chance and really wasn't that close. So, yeah, I gave up on them. And the Raptors, I'm not ready to give up on them yet. They're a young team. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, really their second good crack at it. But it's not looking so great for them either. I think the Heat have the experience with Dwayne. They have the youth. They have those rookies. They have Hassan. So, JJ as well.
Yeah, JJ played well.
So, yeah, I think they're going to pull it out. Like you said, the injuries will be something to watch. You know, if Dwayne and Hassan can't really go, that might change things. But otherwise, I think the Heat have the advantage.
Yeah, and I think Hassan even said before game one, the thigh injury he suffered during the first round wasn't fully healed. So that's the one I'm keeping an eye on, even more than Wade. Because Jonas Valanciunas had a monster game in game one, 24 mm-hmm. points, 14 rebounds, even with Hassan there for most of it. And with Lowry and DeRozan both struggling so much, I feel like you just feed the big man. Just let mm-hmm. him get going.
Totally agree. Totally.
And that's only going to, I mean, in theory, should help you draw fouls on Whiteside. So that can really negate the one advantage Miami has in the front court. No, even if Whiteside's fully healthy, I think that's the route you go in game two. And then hope Lowry's late night shooting session paid off, because he's been in such a slump that now he's starting to hesitate when he has open shots. And you just can't do that. Like, you can't overthink. It really is going to, I mean, Toronto's offense is so reliant on those two guys that if you have either one of them even remotely hesitate, it's bad news bears for Toronto.
You hate to see a player start hesitating.
Yeah.
We go through that a lot with Danny Green in San Antonio.
Right,
it's like
right.
You can see him thinking. You know he's overthinking it, you know.
Yeah.
It's never good.
Yeah.
I'm pulling for Lowry. He's a Philly guy.
Yeah.
He's a tough guy. You know, he's playing with that burst of sack or whatever. I think Blake Griffin had one of those last year. I remember because it was so disgusting looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully he can break out. But I think they need to give Corey Joseph a few more minutes, and they need to feed Valanciunas more. But whether they will figure that out, I don't know.
I agree. I do think the Raptors take game two, but then I have a feeling Miami sweeps the two at home and then takes it in six. So, again, we'll see what happens. Fingers crossed that Toronto can take game two and turn this into a series, or this really is going to be a crappy first round, save for Spurs Thunder.
Yeah.
And we can thank the Warriors for making it a crappy second round, because they had the Trailblazers in game two. They really had the Dubs on the ropes. It seemed like they were going to even it out. They're up 87-76 at the end of three. Damian Lillard had just gone off for 17 points in the third quarter, including a three-pointer at the buzzer. So it's looking like the champs are on the ropes. They're going to be tied 1-1, have given up home court advantage. Then you start have to worrying about Steph Curry's timeline for return. It sounds like he's going to be ready either for game three Saturday or game four Monday. But you figure if you're 1-1, you're probably trying to rush him back a little bit. Up 2-0, you've got a little more breathing room. So it's looking like they're going to have to rush him back, and then the Warriors just went off in the fourth quarter. They finished the game on a 34-12 run. Festus Ezeli was really a huge difference maker. Had 8 points, 6 rebounds, and a block. He was a plus 13 in 13 minutes after barely playing throughout the whole postseason. So that was a big game changer for them. And then, yeah, Clay did Clay things, hit a couple threes in the fourth quarter. And the Trailblazers just looked totally overmatched. So I don't think after giving up that big of a lead, we have any hope of the Blazers pulling the upset. But at least we can hope for game six, maybe. Sarah, if if the Blazers can at least take game three. And Steph Curry says he is healthy. Doctors clear him. Do you bring him back for game four?
That is such a tough question. It really, really depends on how he's feeling. And the thing is, like, I don't want to say that he would lie, but, you know, he's going to fudge it a little bit. He's going to say he's ready, even if he's not feeling great.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know, you know, how good he's really feeling. I don't think you bring him back. What's the worst that could happen is you go back home 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that's going to be the scenario anyway.
Right.
So, no, you don't risk it. That team is playing so well. They have Portland on the ropes without him. So I don't see any reason that you need to push that.
Yeah, I'm right with you. Morton, even before the series started, said the Warriors should bench him through the semifinals. Hold him out until the conference finals. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, I agree. Unless you're down 3-2, It just doesn't seem. You said it. I mean, they're playing extremely well even without him, and their defense was lackluster at the beginning of game two, and it let Portland get hot, hit a couple open threes, but they really honed in on Dame late. I don't think he had a single point in the fourth quarter. Maybe he had one in garbage time.
No, he did not score.
Did not score at all. There you go. So after going off for 17 in the third, you know, they really focus up, hold him scoreless in the fourth. Draymond is just playing so freaking well. Like, it's unfair to have that type of an advantage when your point guard is out, that you can give it to your four-man or your five-man and have him play the point, but that's where we are with the Warriors. I mean, I don't see the point in bringing Steph back. Maybe the only scenario, aside from being down 3-2, is if he's just saying, like, look, I'm rusty. You know, the Spurs-Thunder looks like it's going 7, so we're going to have a long layoff between the series, so let me get a little game action so I'm not totally cold, haven't played in like almost a month by the time the conference finals start. But that, I mean, that injury, he's said it, he's not going to be 100% healed once he comes back. So I think he's just so important to what they do. You want to give him as much time as possible, avoid him putting any stress on that leg until absolutely needed. So
yeah,
I'm with you. Seems like the Dubs are going to be in the conference finals. I want to see a full strength Dubs. So let's hope the Warriors play it smart with him. Either way, Portland's, that crowd is crazy. Maybe Lillard goes off again and can make it 2-1. But
yeah, they could get a game. They may very well get one out there, but I still don't think it's anything the Dubs need to worry about. Yeah. For them or for his future, you know, it was not that long ago that he had all those ankle problems, and you know, there was concern about what kind of a career he would have because of that. And he's finally been able to get on the floor and play through stuff, and yeah, you don't want to set him back at all.
That's very true. And can we agree that Anderson Varejao should never play ahead of Festus Ezeli again?
Yeah, we can probably agree on that.
Okay, good.
Festus, his 8 points were their first 8 points of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, he was unreal. He was so good. Was just throwing him lobs left and right.
I wrote a breakdown of that one also for B-Ball Breakdown. So
there we go. Check that out at bballbreakdown.com, everyone.
If you're interested in reading more about it, go ahead and look that up.
So let's switch over to our Where Amazing Happens segment, because we've had a couple of really amazing things happen the last couple of days. The first, we teased at it last time. Indiana was thinking about letting Frank Vogel, their head coach, go. And on Thursday, Larry Bird made it official. He didn't deem it a firing, kindly. He just said, Frank's contract is up and we've decided not to renew it. I mean, Morton and I both railed against this last time. Sarah, what do you think of Indiana going a different direction here?
It's an interesting choice by Larry Legend.
Yeah.
I guess his reasoning is that it's his personal belief that coaches get stale after 3 years. The teams don't listen to them anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Spurs are definitely done listening to Pop then. That's right. For a long time now. I mean, Pop has actually said something like that before too. Not 3 years, but I think a few years ago he thought about walking away because he thought, do they really listen to me anymore?
Interesting.
But I think he's proven that they do.
Right.
It's kind of like the debate about whether to blow up a team that is a playoff team, a good team, but maybe not quite top tier contending. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I look at this. It's Frank Vogel is obviously a good coach. And I don't know. The thing is, if you feel like you want to make a change, you need to have some idea of where you want to go. Like, what are you going to do that's going to make you significantly better?
I don't,
we'll see what they come up with. I don't see who's out there that's really going to definitely be better than what they had in Vogel.
Right. Yeah. It seemed like, so Kevin McHale withdrew his name from the Sacramento search earlier Thursday. Mm-hmm. So then there was some smoke about maybe McHale and Bird reunite, but Bird even addressed McHale in the press conference Thursday and said, that's not fair to him. I'm not going to hire him. So I don't know if that's a smokescreen and maybe he's actually interested or he's really not. But yeah, I agree. I don't know that there's a name that's out there that makes you a drastically better team next year. It seems like Bird's big gripe is that they didn't score enough. And someone tweeted, I forget who, that they spoke with him earlier in the year and he said that he wanted them to score 105 points per game this season. I think they scored about 102, which is still pretty good.
Damn it, that's not 105.
Yeah, so I guess, I mean, it seems like that, you know, even in the press conference, Bird stressed, we need to score more. But look at that roster.
Yeah.
Like, who's, you got Paul George, and then you have an older Monta. But aside from that, like, it seems like it's a more of a failing on Bird's part to assemble a roster capable of playing that style more than it is Frank Vogel's fault that he couldn't milk more offense out of that team.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know what he was expected to do, really. I guess he just wanted him to play, what, ultra small all the time, regardless of how it went.
Yeah, and so they did that for a while, and it didn't really work all that well. And Miles Turner got hurt early in the year, which really took away from their ability to do that. Once he came back, they started switching more to a traditional Turner at the four, Ian Mahinmi at the five. So I assume that Larry Bird wasn't a huge fan of that and wanted to stick with George at the four and either Turner or Mahinmi at the five. But they just didn't have that much success doing it. So maybe Vogel felt the pressure. It kind of had a sense that he was going to get canned either way. So at least, like, let's put together a winning team and show, like, I can make the playoffs with this roster. I do want to go back to the point you brought up about the 3 years thing. First, that's not a super smart thing to say when you have a head coaching vacancy. Like, here, we'll hire you, but we're going to fire you in 3 years.
Yeah, that's
like, if I'm a coach, I'm like, all right, give me a 5-year fully guaranteed deal. Like, I need an extra 2 years and $10 million when you inevitably fire me. And second, I mean, there's just so much roster turnover in the NBA today. Like, look at the Pacers from 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You have Paul George and George Hill are still there. Lance Stevenson's gone. David West is gone. Roy Hibbert's gone. Vogel's coaching a pretty much an entirely different team.
That's a good point.
So you can't really say, like, oh yeah, these guys have tuned you out, because it's not at all the same team aside from Paul George. That, and so Paul George is my big question here. Like, if he went to Bird behind the scenes and said, look, the guys aren't buying into Vogel, he's got to go. That makes more sense. If Paul George is blindsided by this, or was a big fan of Vogel and urged Bird not to get rid of him, but Bird did anyway, now I'm wondering if Paul George is going to be in Indiana for the next 4 or 5 years. Like, is he one of those guys, like a Jimmy Butler who just signed a new big deal but could be had for the right price?
It's a good question, bud.
Yeah, and if so, damn you, Sixers. Damn you to hell. Because this is what Sam Hinkie spent 3 years building toward. This is the exact kind of scenario.
He's waiting for this moment, yeah.
He really was. And Larry Legend, you could have Jahlil Okafor. He could score 20 a game in his sleep. Just, I mean, if so, that, like, Paul George, that really, you know, again, this is total hypothetical. There's been nothing suggesting Paul George is on the move. I'm just floating this for fun, but could make an already really interesting offseason even more fascinating, both for Indiana and the league as a whole, because once that free agent market dries up, I really do think we're going to see at least one major superstar trade. I want to give credit to Chris Towers of CBS. He actually proposed a possible Paul George for Blake Griffin swap. I thought that was actually pretty interesting for both sides. At least it's better than the proposed Blake Griffin for Carmelo trade that we've heard so much about.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. I mean, if that was on the table, Sarah, would you do Paul George for Blake Griffin?
Let me think about this for a second. Sure, why not? I just want to shake up the NBA a little bit.
You're like Morton. He's taught you so well.
You know what I love, too? That you try to give away Jahlil Okafor literally every podcast.
I trade him for a washing machine.
We got to hit our quota. It's got to happen once a podcast, at least.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just want someone to take him. Please. Please. You know, I think, again, super hypothetical. Cannot stress this enough. But that's an awesome trade for both sides, I think. Because Paul George wouldn't have to... He's a really great scorer, but I don't know that you also want him to be your primary offensive creator. So having CP3 there would take that responsibility off of his hands. And then he could just be like this slashing, spot-up monster. You can put him at the four at times, but you can also play the three with him. And then Blake and Miles Turner would be fascinating together because Blake can really shoulder that scoring load and Miles Turner is kind of that rebounding, shot-blocking presence, but he's also got a nice little mid-range stroke, so he's like a skinnier version of DeAndre Jordan that could actually shoot. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm Larry Bird and I'm really, you know, I'm really looking to shake things up because clearly I already got rid of my coach. You know, if PG3 starts getting a little frustrated behind the scenes, Doc Rivers is the first guy I'm calling and saying, let's do this straight up right now. Blake for Paul. So we'll see what happens there. But I really hope Indiana finds someone who's not Mark Jackson.
You can see like the writing on the wall, though, can't you? Like, I don't think Larry will do it.
Yeah.
But the fact that, yeah, he's a former Pacer, and that seems to be, like, all the rage right now.
Right. Oh, my God. Oh, it would make me so sad.
Oh,
but where do you think Vogel ends up? Do you think he's in the league next year, or is he taking a break?
If I were him, I probably would take a break.
Yeah.
Because I don't want Houston, I don't want Sacramento, and I don't want New York. But I could see him going to New York. That might not be terrible.
I would be so sad. If the Knicks, I mean, they just have screwed this coaching search up from the beginning and have been like, oh, yeah, we love Kurt Rambis. Oh, we'll interview David Blatt, I guess. We'll... And now, did you see Phil Jackson's, like, on vacation right now?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so apparently, like, the people in his coaching search are being notified, oh, by the way, Phil's on vacation. He'll get back to you eventually.
Wow.
So if he's on vacation, he's not even like doing stuff right now the day Vogel gets released and then they still end up with him. That's just like Adam Silver is actually rigging the NBA, just like David Stern did. Just kidding, everyone. Just, it's not a conspiracy. It's only with the Sixers.
We should just have a tinfoil hat segment. We do a conspiracy theory like every day for at least 5 minutes.
Oh, we totally should. Yeah. I don't think you want to get me down that road with the Colangelos.
I absolutely do. Oh, man.
Yeah, so we agree that there are no good fits for Vogel. I actually think if he's going to go anywhere, I want him to go to Houston just because I want to see if he can get James Harden to play defense. I don't think he could, but maybe. Or at least maybe he can design a scheme that hides James Harden better than.
That's the more likely scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting him to care is like, I think that's beyond the power of magic. So
Right.
we'll see. Yeah, I think we can at least agree that he won't be going to Sacramento, right? He's not crazy.
Oh my God, let's hope not.
How many people have they interviewed?
I think we're next on the list.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I'm gonna talk about how much I want to play 4-on-5 all the time. Vivek
You'll
is gonna
probably
love
get
me.
hired if you lead with that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, just
yeah.
depends how bad do you want the job, Ryan?
Not at all. I just want their lottery picks. That's all.
Well, you can then give them to the Sixers.
Well, that
See?
we're yeah we already have their next three possibly.
There you
So
go.
I just want more. I want like their 2022 pick. Speaking of embarrassing Western Conference franchises, the Lakers are back in the news. Byron Scott was on ESPN yesterday on Rachel Nichols' show, The Jump, where he talked about being surprised that the Lakers let him go. He said that when he signed on, they told him, "Hey, this is a rebuilding period. Are you okay with that?" He said, "Yeah, I'm okay with that. Are you okay with that?" So it seemed like he thought he was getting at least 3 years. Like they hired him in 2014. They said it's a transition period. We're going to get some young players. It's going to be Kobe's final season or two. So there's going to be this like weird conflict. So he was surprised by them letting him go. I will say, I've been really harsh on Byron Scott on this podcast, but he actually gave a semi-reasonable explanation for his handling of D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle. He said basically that those guys were entitled a-holes and that they came into the season like thinking they were gonna start because that's what their draft status, they were picked 2 and 7, so that's they deserve that role. And he tried to humble them, and he was sitting next to Tracy McGrady in this interview, and he's like, "Hey, like, T-Mac had to earn his spot. I had to earn my spot. Like, nothing is given to you when you're in the NBA." So he benched them, and then they came back into the starting lineup a couple months later, and he said they were actually a lot hungrier. So I thought it was interesting, only in that it's easy to make fun of these guys, and like I did it plenty throughout the season. I think half of my Twitter feed was just Byron Scott jokes, and I wrote a couple things for B-Ball Breakdown about what he was doing and why he was a tire fire. It's easy to mock that, but we
Right.
have to remember there's some stuff going on behind the scenes that not even that we don't know about, just as people like looking from the outside in, but that reporters covering the team either don't know about or aren't reporting.
Right.
I think read between the lines and you got a sense that D'Angelo was kind of that way, but no one like came out and said, "Look, this guy is acting like a jackass. He he needs to be humbled a little bit." That's what Byron is doing, and he's like laying down his coaching career for it because he's, based on the way he handled this last season, I would be mortified if he ever got a coaching job again. But I'm impressed at least a little bit with his explanation of what happened there.
Yeah, how many guys are afraid to do that with a high draft
Right.
pick, you know?
Yeah.
And so, if that's really what happened, and he was trying to humble them and get them to buy in a little bit more, then yeah, you actually have to respect that a little bit. And it looks like he is paying for it, but I mean, we'll be honest, that's not the only reason, I wouldn't think.
Right.
He has a real antiquated way of looking at the game that doesn't
Yes.
match with what's happening today, but yeah, I would definitely give him credit for that.
Yeah, I feel bad because for a Hardwood Paroxysm, we had a Star Wars roundtable yesterday for May the 4th Be With You Day.
Yep.
And one of the questions was, who was the NBA's Jar Jar Binks? And I said it was Byron Scott. because
oh no.
Well, because Jar Jar says, like, he's really annoying and he says stupid nonsensical things all the time. And Byron was really annoying and said stupid nonsensical things a lot this year, and his explanations for why he was benching D'Angelo switched from a game-to-game basis. So yeah. So I said that he was Jar Jar, but now I kind of feel bad about that. I also said Jerry Colangelo was Emperor Palpatine. I do not
think. Let's be real, though. That is 100% accurate.
Yeah, like, I don't feel bad about that one at all. That is just, that is true.
Even looked like if you put him in a hood,
right?
You wouldn't be able to tell them apart.
Right? That's what I was thinking. My God. Yeah, someone needs, I'm terrible with Photoshop. Someone in Photoshop, please do that. Send it to me. That's going to be my Twitter avatar forever. Darth Jerry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's absolutely him. Absolutely. Yeah. And he's always, like, pulling strings behind the scenes.
Right? Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I said the Sixers ownership were his Padawan, and they had such a good idea. Like, they could have brought balance to the Force, but instead they fired Sam Hinkie, and it might not be killing younglings, but they didn't fire Sam Hinkie, I should say. He coerced him into resigning. So
he saw it coming and he just jumped.
Yeah, right. Jumped out ahead of it. Exactly. They gave him an Order 66 and he got the hell out. Let's touch on one more thing here. So the Chris Bosh saga has finally come to an end. Miami has ruled him out for the rest of the postseason. He was in a joint statement with them, and they said after conferring with the medical staff, the Players Association got involved this week. They've all decided that he's done for the year. It's still unclear whether he was on blood thinners. If he was, he was just not going to get cleared. That shouldn't have been a question. I think the question was whether it was safe for him to go off. I mean, it's a game, right? Like, basketball, right. It's just a game. It's not worth putting your life in danger for. He's already sacrificed a lot by coming to Miami. Like, you know, how many jokes was he the butt of for those first couple years when he was, you know, the Like a Bosch video, that kind of stuff. So he's already put a lot on the line. I think it's smart of the Heat to have played it really, really cautiously here. And even though, you know, a Heat team with Bosch, if I'm Cleveland, that's a big red flag. Like, that, you know, I think the Heat are already the one team that could give Cleveland a little bit of a scare. But if Bosch was on that team, like, that would be an excellent Eastern Conference Finals. So, I mean, it's safe to say that the Heat are not necessarily foregoing their shot at the championship, but definitely lessening their shot. Mm-hmm. In the interest of their player. But bravo, Heat. Like, good for you for keeping what's important in perspective. What do you think, Sarah? Were you a fan of this move?
Yeah, I obviously, we don't know all of the details, but yeah, I just never want to see a guy risk his own health. I mean, obviously people play banged up and stuff, but this is completely different from that. And yeah, I never want to see that. It grosses me out. It's, like, creepy, a little icky. He needs to just sit it out. I know he wants to be out there. I'm sorry for him that he can't be out there. But there are much more important things, obviously.
For sure. And if they, hey, who knows, maybe they retain Whiteside next year and they're right back in this position. Let's just hope.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the second straight year where he's had this kind of an issue right around the All-Star break and it knocked him out for the season. So let's hope that doctors and the medical professionals that he's consulting with can get to the bottom of this and prevent any further reoccurrences, because we want you back in the NBA, CB4. Just
yep.
Get healthy first. So let's switch to our weekly crush segment, since we haven't done this in a little while. Sarah, let's start with you. Who are you crushing on this week?
It's safe to assume that I'm always crushing on this person. I just miss him.
Okay.
He's the one who got away.
Yeah.
But yeah, Corey Joseph. He over the last four games, he's averaged like 10 points per game, shooting 55%. The numbers with him are never going to like blow anybody away, especially playing the minutes that he plays. He only plays like a little over 20 minutes a game. And that's what he was when he was with the Spurs, too. I mean, you knew he's not going to have huge numbers, but he's not going to turn the ball over very much. He's going to get a few rebounds. He's going to get maybe a couple assists. He's going to shoot the ball well. And he's just going to be steady, you know? Mm-hmm. That was, like, his greatest selling point. He didn't do anything spectacularly, but he was just all around good. And you could trust him. I mean, can we make the argument, possibly, that he's been the best guard for the Raptors?
Yeah, I don't think that's a stretch at all. And I named him as my X factor for the Raptors in this series in my preview at bballbreakdown.com. I think it's...
Plug it.
Yeah, keep reading it. It's still relevant. No, I think you're totally spot on. I think he's absolutely, at least, especially, I mean, if Lowry gets it going again, you know, maybe he takes a lesser role. But mm-hmm. if Lowry keeps struggling, you got to start giving him more minutes, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I miss you, Corey.
Yeah.
Yes. I miss everybody, though. I miss Nando. I think I read today that he was voted, or is going to be voted, first team EuroLeague.
Oh, okay.
So congratulations, Nando. Well done.
That's awesome. Yeah, Corey Joseph is also the one that got away from me because I wanted him on the Sixers last year, and we refused to overpay him.
Ah, Sixers.
Yeah. One day, we'll maybe sign up for, not even a point guard, just any free agent. We might dip our toes into free agency, maybe.
Anybody.
Yeah, except for Rajon Rondo. Do not sign Rajon Rondo under any circumstances. Yeah, we've been going, Sixers Twitter has just been throughout this whole series, like, oh my God, we're going to max out DeMar DeRozan, aren't we? We're going to do it. I don't want that. I like him as a player, but with Brian Colangelo's relationship with him from his Toronto days, it seems all too likely, and it makes me want to vomit everywhere. So that's my take. It's my hot Sixers take this week. Thank you. Much like you picked a former Spur, I am picking a former Sixer for my crush this week. Mo Harkless, who actually never played a game as a Sixer because he immediately got traded in the Andrew Bynum deal. You know, he was never... He had some flashes in Orlando, but was never all that consistent. Got traded for basically nothing. I think a top 55 protected second round pick this year. So good job as always, Orlando, in your management of assets. Really impressed. Toward the end of the season, Terry Stotts moved him into the starting lineup. He averaged 12 points and 6.5 rebounds per game. I think it was like 11 or 12 games at the end of the year. And then in the first round series against the Clippers, he averaged 12.7 points and 6.2 rebounds while starting all six games. Stotts moved him on to CP3 before CP3 broke his hand. And he actually did, you know, he didn't like completely shut down CP3, but he made him work. I just love this kid. I know he's got some flaws. He's not a great shooter. He's not super consistent, but his ability to switch onto, especially on the point guards, I mean, he can really guard 1 through 4. So if he develops that 3-point shot, he's going to be like that next wave of 3-and-D guy. He is a free agent this summer, so I think, you know, I'm already clamoring for the Sixers to bring him back, overpay him a little bit, and see if he can develop that shot. You know, maybe he's like the next type of Jay Crowder. You know, I don't know if it happens, but I'm just really impressed. He, again, even against Klay Thompson, he switched on to him for a little bit in game two and actually held him in check for at least the first half. Got into a little bit of foul trouble, which is when the Warriors started making their move.
Yeah.
So let's hope he can stay out of foul trouble. And at least, actually, I want him to get into foul trouble. I want him to get into a lot of foul trouble, decrease his market value. Let the Sixers steal him. But no, I'm really impressed with Harkless. And I'm just happy for the guy because it seemed like he was on the precipice of kind of turning into a guy who's just going to float around the league and not really find a good fit. So I'm glad that in Portland, Terry Stotts, my pick for Coach of the Year, really tapped into what makes him so such a great fit for the way the NBA is played today.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right, so that's going to do it for us. We will be back soon to talk more playoff action. As always, be sure to check out bballbreakdown.com for all of your playoff coverage. We've got recaps of every game. Sarah's been writing a couple, as we've mentioned throughout. And we will be back soon. So, Sarah, as always, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Brian. Take care.
All right, you too.